This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. Icelanders voted on Saturday in national elections that have drawn attention internationally. A renegade political party that emerged only a few years ago, calling itself the Pirate Party, was expected to win big. In the end, the Pirate Party won 14.5% of seats in Parliament, a big jump from what it held before. Another relatively new party called Resurrection won just over 10%. One of Europe's smallest countries, Iceland, has in recent years been the focus of admiration from the US left for its dealings with banking executives in the recession. My guest is Vidar Thor Steinsson. He is a lecturer in the Department of Comparative Studies at Ohio State University, and he's been active in various social justice movements in Iceland. And we had one recently to talk about an essay he had written in the book Europe in Revolt called The Iceland Myth. He now joins us once more in the program. Welcome back, Vidar.
Pleasure to be with you, Sonali.
So first, let's talk about these elections from a broad perspective. They were meant to essentially elect members of the parliament. And as is the case in many European countries, it's a parliamentary system. So you don't know yet what the final outcome will be because it depends on the coalitions that the parties form.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, elections in Iceland have always been a complicated affair because it's a multipolar political system. It's not one where you have, you know, two large blocks, as is the case in the United States. Traditionally, there have been four political parties in Iceland, but this time around, there's actually seven parties that made it into the parliament. So, and none of them has a clean majority. So it's a complicated process of negotiations that's happening right now, and it's difficult to really say who is the clear winner. There's a number of paradigms that can be used to say who's the winner. It can be, you know, who is the biggest party, but it can also be who made the biggest gains since the last election. And then, of course, it's just the question of who ends up in government. So even a small party that may have seen losses can still end up in government and still be a winner of the election in that sense. There's all kinds of complicated scenarios that we're seeing right now.
So then what has there been an actual change in the numbers of parliament seats won by those parties that were traditionally in power in this latest election?
Yes, there have most definitely been some historic changes happening right now. So, for example, the Social Democrats, the Social Democratic Party, is all but disappearing. They have the lowest number of members of parliament that they've ever had in their history. It's quite a remarkable defeat. And then we have also seen these two new parties make really significant inroads. So on the one hand, the Pirate Party, rising up to a number of 10 MPs. They used to have only three during the last term. And this new centrist political party called Resurrection or Reform, depending on the translation, which, you know, came in with and got 10% of the vote and did incredibly well.
And actually, how do you say the Resurrection Party's name in Icelandic?
Viðreisn. It's hard to pronounce,
okay.
But I mean, two of Iceland's traditional parties that have a sort of long historical legacy in Icelandic politics both did really well in this election, and they are the ones who are furthest to the right and furthest to the left. So it was the Independence Party, traditionally Iceland's conservative party and historically the largest one. They gained in this election, and much to my dismay, the electorate in Iceland gave a certain stamp of approval to them, resulting in 29% for them. But there was good news in the fact that the Left Green Party, which has inherited the tradition of socialist parties and communist parties in Iceland, they also did really well with 16% of the vote and making a significant gain from the last election.
And so what are the kinds of coalitions that you expect to happen that would determine whether Iceland basically moves somewhat to the right versus somewhat to the left?
Well, I mean, so this would take me probably hours to clarify if I wanted to go to all the possible coalitions, as I'm sure you can understand, with seven political parties represented in the parliament. But I mean, odds are that the conservative coalition that was in power might be able to hang on by introducing this new centrist party called Resurrection by letting them into the government. But there is also the possibility of a very, shall we say, diverse left-leaning coalition. But again, it will also have to include this new centrist party, and it would not be a very strong leftist government. It wouldn't have mandate to practice, serious or radical leftist reforms in Iceland at all. So, I mean, unfortunately, I think after all, the results of this election are not really very positive news for anyone, concerned with radical social justice in any way. And it does look like the pirates will most likely not be in any conceivable government coalition at this point.
And so let's talk about that, because the Pirate Party has garnered a lot of media attention. One of the leaders of the Pirate Party, Birgitta Jonsdottir, was has been getting a lot of she's sort of become a bit of a rock star figure. And I suppose just the name Pirate Party has and their symbol and slogan has made for some very good sound bites in the media. Is the Pirate Party's win 14.5% of the vote been a little bit overblown?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the media coverage in outlets such as the New York Times and the Independent yesterday and this morning, I found it incredibly irresponsible and inaccurate at times. I mean, because during the spring and summer, the Pirate Party was polling extremely high. The polls were incredible. It looked as if they would be potentially getting 40% of the votes, and it looked as if they might even become Iceland's biggest political party, a challenger, and even overshadowing the Conservative Independence Party. So, I mean, understandably, there was some excitement, and even in the latest polls, they were still, sort of measuring close to 20%. And it seems to me like these international media outlets, they decided to pay, plane tickets and buy expensive hotel rooms for all their journalists to go to Iceland in order to write a story that was supposed to be a story about a pirate victory. That didn't actually happen, but they chose to write that kind of story anyway, which I find entertaining. I mean, this is not how anyone in Iceland sees it. I believe the headline of the New York Times was speaking of the pirates as the big winner. This is not really how anyone perceives it in Iceland. It's rather seen as a disappointment, first of all, because in the end they only got 14.5%, and barely half the number of votes that the Conservatives got. And additionally, in the run-up to the elections, the Pirates had suggested a particular kind of left-leaning coalition with all the other former opposition parties that are towards the left in Icelandic politics. And but unfortunately, when the votes were counted, there was not enough for these parties to form that particular coalition. So, both the Pirate Party itself did worse than we thought. And additionally, the coalition that they had championed was also, rejected by voters, so to speak. So, I mean, the mood on the left in Iceland and among leftists and progressives is a sense of disappointment, to be honest.
And how does the Pirate Party itself characterize itself? Because there might also be a bit of a misconception on the US left that the Pirate Party is a strictly left party, but is it really?
No, it's absolutely not clearly a leftist party. They have themselves explicitly sort of refused to call themselves a leftist party. They've rather claimed to be, above and beyond these categories, and claimed that they're outdated and so forth. And I sort of as the party, well, the party has been developing very quickly in the last few years and developing its sort of grassroots membership base. And I mean, for a while, it had a very strong contingent of essentially very pro-market libertarians. But I would say, in the end, though, they have sort of leaned more to the left if you just look at the things they're emphasizing and the kind of talk, the kind of language you hear from both their grassroots members and their leadership. And in their internal primaries before this election, fortunately, these sort of vocal sort of pro-market libertarians were largely rejected and did not, you know, gain any seats in the parliament, for example.
And so, in a way, is it that a party like the Pirate Party rejects the use of left labels because of the failures of social democrat type parties elsewhere in Europe and in Iceland itself, that to sort of see it itself as that doesn't want to be seen as a traditional left party because the traditional left parties have been disappointing?
Yes, I think that's one reason. And I mean, in a way, it has been a smart decision for them in some ways, because that way they have managed to attract people who, I mean, the people who just have a sort of a general disillusion with politics generally, don't feel that there is a real difference between left-wing and right-wing parties, which is, of course, partly justified. So this has, of course, been a way, I think, for the Pirate Party to just simply, you know, sort of strengthen its image as this kind of real party of innovation and novelty. But I mean, I will say that, for example, Birgitta Jonsdottir, who is the sort of informal leader of the Pirates, I mean, she's someone who was very well known in sort of grassroots social activism circles in Iceland from way before she founded the Pirate Party. So, I mean, I think even though she makes these claims about beyond left and right, I think most people will know sort of where she stands on many issues, that her heart beats to the left. And also, I think it's important to see the Pirate Party in light of these sort of post-crisis developments in both in on both sides of the Atlantic, because the Pirate Party certainly was born out of the upheavals following the 2008 banking crash in Iceland. And again, thinking of Birgitta's profile, she was someone who became she was a prominent voice during the 2008-2009 protests. She was interviewed sometimes on TV just as the sort of, you know, street activist. And she got into parliament with this other political party that was founded immediately following the crash. But that party, unfortunately, was dissolved, but that was when Birgitta went on to sort of lay the foundations for the Pirate Party in Iceland, based on the model from European pirate parties, such as the one in Sweden, but has definitely sort of taken on a new life of its own. And I mean, as far as I'm aware, it is unparalleled, the kind of success that it has had after all. Even though there was a slight disappointment with these elections, it's still quite remarkable that the Pirate Party is now the third largest party in Icelandic politics, and is definitely here to stay. It has a very impressive network of activists who I think are likely to sustain this party. So they've definitely staked a claim to be taken seriously as a presence in Icelandic politics.
And Vidar, how does the American named Edward Snowden figure into Iceland's elections and politics?
Well, I mean, one of the things that the Pirate Party talked about, especially after it came into the parliament for the first time, I mean, during the previous elections, was that it sort of floated these ideas, came up with these proposals about making Iceland into a safe haven for whistleblowers and making Iceland into a haven of data freedom and these kinds of things. And yes, they did seriously propose the idea that you know, people like Edward Snowden could come to Iceland. I mean, these things were not put into practice, because after all, the Pirates were not in government. They were just, you know, one of many voices in the parliament. Interestingly, these things have actually sort of not been so much highlighted anymore by the Pirates. This was not one of their electoral campaign issues at all. I mean, there was no mention of this idea of, you know, a safe haven for whistleblowers. Edward Snowden's name was not mentioned during this electoral campaign. And some other of these sort of famously edgy and controversial pirate issues, such as, you know, the right to share and download torrents and copyrighted materials, that kind of thing. These things also largely disappeared from their platform. Maybe it's a sign of them becoming a little bit more mainstream and avoiding difficult and controversial topics, it's hard to say. But I found it slightly disappointing that they've not been interested in sort of insisting more on precisely these issues, because I do think they're very important.
And then finally, Vidar, can you put Iceland's election results into the broader European context, whether you see a, given the continued sort of economic problems facing Europeans, the refugee crises, Europe's place in the world, if you will, whether Iceland is going against the grain or sort of part of the trend, knowing that it is still quite early, coalitions haven't been formed, etc.
Yeah, I mean, Icelandic politics is still very much existing in this long shadow of the 2008 banking crisis. And even though Iceland has made a rather miraculous economic recovery, the political scene in Iceland is still experiencing upheavals, new parties coming into existence and still a real sense of change and opportunities for new developments. I'll say there is one thing characteristic of Iceland that I cherish, which I think is greatly important. It's the fact that we have not seen the rise of extreme right-wing populist parties in Iceland. There was a party that tried to run on that platform for this election, and I believe they got around 100 votes all in all in the entire country. That is a big victory, I think, and it's great that those have been kept out of Icelandic politics. So that kind of right-wing populist response to crisis has been averted in Iceland so far, and that's a great thing. However, on the other hand, what I find lacking is the presence of a clear leftist populist alternative to the crisis condition, and a sense of renewal that would come with a decisive and strong leftist identity, similar perhaps to what we've seen in the UK with Jeremy Corbyn, with the Podemos party in Spain, and possibly even with Bernie Sanders in the United States. So I think these innovations that we've seen in the political sphere in Iceland, they have remained somewhat centrist and somewhat moderate. And the Pirate Party, I think, is perhaps more moderate than popular sort of mainstream media coverage would imply.
Well, we'll certainly follow up and see how things play out, and maybe the Pirate Party will develop more by the time the next elections come around. We'll certainly pay attention to that. Vidar, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Vidar Thorsteinsson is a lecturer in the Department of Comparative Studies at Ohio State University. He's been active in various social justice movements in Iceland. His essay in the recent anthology entitled Europe in Revolt is called The Iceland Myth. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can also find us on Twitter at twitter.com/ruwithsonali.